Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 7, delivered on February 11, 2019. The title of this lecture is Time Value of Money. Today, Time Value of Money. But before I do that, I do want to show you some financial analysis, ratio analysis, done with Excel. Now, to do that, I'm going to go to the SEC. And go to Filings, Company Filings, Search. And I'm going to avoid dramatic companies doing this. I'm going to do something where, along the way, the book is more than adequate to show you the formulas and how to calculate them. In this session and in subsequent sessions, we'll do the formulas using Excel, which about anyone worth his salt is going to do nowadays. But we're also going to talk about, I'm going to explain to you how you interpret the ratios of a company, what it actually means. And to do that, I'll pull up Target. I'm going to find it's got a 10K coming up very soon. And that 10K will, of course, have all kinds of information. A new one will. But so this one's a little bit stale, but it's just fine for what we're going to do. And I'm going to save the file. And then I'm going to open it. This is Target. These are available to anyone who wants them because Target's a public company. It must provide its financials in Excel format for anyone in the world to access and use for whatever purposes he or she might wish. The one thing that you have to appreciate, and I brought this up before, is how many financial statements there actually are in a report. The tabs go on and on. And one thing that you might want to do when you do these kinds of, for this class or for any class that you would use these in, is first of all to organize the tabs in terms of what you're going, how useful they are. For financial analysis, we really need only the, well, first round financial analysis, we need really only the consolidated statement of operations. This is the income statement. And as I had cautioned you before, we might want, they call them different names. Now, the next one I'd want is the balance sheet. And that's clear over here. So what I'll probably do is just slide this tab over here. So that essentially I'm not changing anything at all. I'm just putting them where I can get to them in referencing formulas, worksheet reference formulas. Now, another one that's probably going to be important to me is my statement of cash flows. There. Okay. So I'll probably want to slide this one over and put this one, really? And then, if I can find it, this one's actually sometimes kind of hard to find. The statement of retained earnings might be worth us. There it is. Okay, so I'm going to bring that one over too. figure out where the heck I was. Is that where? Nope. I put it one too far. There we go. Statement of cash flow. Yeah, there we go. I think I've got them in order now. And then the document entity information. For our purposes, I'm just going to get rid of that. This is the beginning. Now, when you use big data, the first thing, what I did here is actually a part of what we call the cleanup of the data. It's before you actually use data for analytics, and this applies to finance, accounting, marketing, any meaningful business subject, you're going to be bringing down data. You're going to have to know how to do what I'm doing, I'm showing you here. And then you clean it up. You get rid of stuff that you don't want or get it into the background. And then you might even have to go in and fix some numbers or put in some lines. Like, interestingly enough, Target is one of the few corporations that actually calculates gross. The only problem is that they don't call it the right thing. This is not the gross margin. That's a ratio. This is gross earnings or gross income or gross profit. It's not gross margin, but they're using it, and they no one's going to yell at them for it. So that's actually, the margin is a ratio of the cost of good, of gross earnings to sales. You could also call this gross income, whatever you want. Matter of fact, I think I'll call it gross income because that's the most normal name for it. Anyway, this is cleanup of the data. Just getting everything set up so that you don't have to go and do that again. Now we're going to do something, the dashboard. The dashboard I talked about in the last lecture, it's a front face that the end users will see. They won't see the background, all the data, all the machinery to get things done, to get answers. The dashboard will also be what you make look nice so you can print it out as a report. All of that is part of this. So, moving on here, we're going to create, insert a worksheet, and we're going to call this the dashboard. Now, you're going to do all the mechanics of getting the numbers in the dashboard. And then the last thing you'll do is make it look nice so that the end users will see a pretty face, and they will also, you'll also be able to print it out as a report for meetings. That front page will have that look. That's why you don't want to use, and I think I already mentioned this to you, you don't want to use colors and pretties in it like that. It's going to need to be printed most likely on an inkjet or a laser printer that's not color, and so you don't want colors that could come out as dark grays or blacks when you print the thing out, because then you got a disaster. You're printing it out an hour before you've got a meeting, and, well, that would be a bad thing if things look bad and you had to go back in and fix. But right off the bat, you don't do anything but the raw data. Okay, so at the top, you just put in these basic headers, okay? And then we proceed. Now, in your resources tab in ReggieNet, you have financial analysis formulas. This is your basic set. Now, of course, you probably want to print this out and get it laminated and put it on the refrigerator or not. But, okay, not. But these are classics. And as a matter of fact, there are one or two in here that aren't even in your book. They're old school stuff, and I'll explain why we would be interested in this. But this is the basis of analytics, and it's not that difficult. It's basically, we are going to do what is called formulas by reference. So, for example, we're going to start with the profitability ratios. And the first one of those is gross margin. Now, this is a lot of what I'm going to tell you here is stylistic detail. Typically, you capitalize only the first word in a multi-word title. In finance, we would not capitalize both gross and margin. We just capitalize the first letter of gross. And then from there, we will calculate the operating margin. And we'll calculate the net margin. We'll calculate a few more, but I just built a few. Now double-click to open it so that you can see what you're doing. We'll format the numbers later. We'll just get the calculations done right off the bat. So the first profitability formula that we'll do is gross margin, which is, by the formula, gross profit over sales. So we go back here to where we were, and this will equal... Now you go over here and you get your gross income right there divided by sales. There you go. Now here's the cool thing. Grab it and it'll just go to the next column in the referencing sheet and take care of that for you. So you're not recalculating over and over something. Operating margin. Now, this is one, and I chose target because before I do that, let me look at the formula for you, show you the formula. Operating margin is EBIT over sales. The problem is, it's operating income over sales. So now we go here and we look for operating margin, so we've got to find operating income or EBIT. And if you look, it's not immediately obvious which one of these that is. They can use a lot of different words. It used to be the SEC demanded exactly the words it specified. Anymore, they can call it all kinds of things. If I prowl around here now, there it is. Nope. There it is, earnings before interest and taxes. So it's that line right there. So we go back to the dashboard, we say equals, and it's going to be the operating income, EBIT. Really? I lost it again. There it is. Divided by the sales. And now the net margin would be net income over sales. Net income. And by the way, I'm going to put this up on ReggieNet for you. Whatever I get done tonight, you'll have this. And it will be a nice little template. Now, the problem, though, is that you'll have to do adjustments because there are extra lines. You can't use Target's template for another company because there might be differences in how many lines, what lines are included, what lines are excluded. So anyway, net margin equals net earnings, there it is, divided by sales. Now, let me go and explain what we've just seen here. Gross margin is gross income over sales. This is how many pennies of every dollar that went into the cash drawer survived paying the wholesale costs of the goods. So in Target's case, its gross margin is a little bit under 30 cents. So in other words, 70 cents of every dollar that Target takes into the cash registers is going out to the suppliers. They're paying to the suppliers of their goods. Now, is that a good one or a bad one? That was a little bit on the low side, but it's fairly stable. Now, the operating margin, and notice that it was pretty darn stable. Pretty darn stable, the gross margin was, from 16 to 17. I'm showing you a company that is very mature. You think of Target as a new company, a young people's company, but it's actually somewhat older. It's gotten past its juvenile years of nonsense, and it's just a company that controls things. You can see, interestingly, with a company that has most of its act together, when a ratios aren't behaving well, it's pretty obvious, and they're easier to analyze that way. Now, operating margin is how many pennies of every dollar that go into the cash register survive both paying the suppliers of the products and salaries, light bills, advertising campaigns, the whole nine yards. In other words, all of your basic costs of running a business for Target, it's 7 cents survived all of its typical costs. Wholesale costs, light bills, internet bills, computer bills, salaries, wages, all of that. The marketing campaign with that stupid, ugly dog with the circle on its eye, that's all there. And after that, 7 cents made it to the next line. And finally, net margin. Geez, that's Target? Wow, they had an erosion. They had some erosion. This is how many pennies of every dollar that goes in the cash register belong to the shareholders. That is what that says right there. In other words, they've paid every bill, including their interest payments to their debt holders and their taxes to Uncle Sugar. And this is how much is left that belongs to you, a stockholder, of every dollar. So in other words, a dollar comes into the cash register. I pay all of the bills out of that dollar, and I have 4 cents left for you. Now, Target can actually either reinvest that money or pay it out as dividends. It's yours, and either thing I do with it is to on your behalf, or you can do a combination of both. Now, we'll see that Target, interestingly enough, gives a lot of its money, the shareholders' residual, back to the shareholders as dividends. In other words, you would not expect this to be a high-growth company because a lot of the money that it makes for the shareholders, it just gives them, says, here, it's yours. It doesn't put it back in to grow the company. You'll see that in a margin later. Now, we have a couple of other ones that are important, too. Return on assets, ROA and ROE. ROA is the net income divided by the assets. So what we would do is we would say that equals, we have to do two sheets now. That's the net income, which is net earnings, divided by, now we have to go over to the balance sheet and get the total assets. So the return on assets, 7.31% against 8.35%. So there's been a slight erosion in ROA. Now, here's an interesting thing. Interpret it like this. A company's assets, its factories, its stores, its inventory, its accounts receivable, its cash in the bank, its land that it owns and buildings, those actually represent a portfolio. It's a portfolio. It's a portfolio mostly of physical assets. And so ROA measures what they've made on that portfolio for the year. That's what ROA is. And I'm going to tell you, let's see what I got here. Okay. Tell you a story. ROA is net income over total assets. Now, ideally, this should be a good number, and it should go up over time. Return on a portfolio should be good, and you should be able to improve it over time. And therein lies a big problem. I see an ROA that keeps going up and up. I begin to worry a great deal about that company. Here's why. You see, these are accounting numbers. So unless a company is constantly buying new assets, investing, total assets will fall because its buildings will be depreciating on the balance sheet over time. So your total assets will begin to deteriorate. But if you work those assets harder and make them more productive, you can still have net income go up while total assets are actually falling. That would make ROA go up. Here's real world of it. Back, the last oil refineries in the United States were built in the 1970s. And in my time in oil and gas, where I was working in that industry, that was in the 1990s. Those existing oil refineries were deteriorating. It wasn't just accounting depreciation. They were economically getting older. Literally, in the cracking towers, if you know how that works, if you've ever seen an oil refinery like those ones past Joliet going up, those big things, those big tubes, those are cracking towers where they heat the oil, and as it comes up, molecules break apart into lighter and lighter hydrocarbon products. You got your distillates, like your jet fuel, your diesel. You got your gasoline of different grades as it goes up. Okay, those were getting old. But they were actually producing more output because there were more cars, more jets, more everything that needed fuel. So those refineries were creating more net income even as they were declining in accounting value and in economic value. So you would see the oil companies reporting these returns on asset that were going up and up and up. Wonderful. Until the 21st century, when those refineries started exploding, killing workers, killing people in the communities around the refineries. There were a number of dramatic, and you might even remember hearing about some of those, explosions of refineries. Catastrophic explosions. Yeah, you can squeeze more and more out of less and less until you can't anymore and something bad happens. Companies have still not learned that lesson. Some haven't. You have to look at why ROA is going up to see if it's really a good thing or a bad thing. The same is true with companies that fire employees. Well, we got rid of 5,000 workers, and we'll just make the workers we have work harder. Yeah, I'm going to get rid of all of you, and you all keep, but you have to do the work of all of those that I used to have. Boy, are we saving money. Boy, are the Wall Street guys happy with us. Aren't we important? Until the day that you start having employees find other places to work, or even worse, until the day that they start talking to unions and they unionize and then they kick your ass and you cry crocodile tears because of the evil of unions. Well, guess what? You did it to yourselves by squeezing more and more out of fewer and fewer people because of that whole productivity crap. You see, ROA can fool you. unless you know how to look at it right. That's why it helps to be a cynical old bastard like I am. Okay, now, the next one is ROE, return on equity, which is net income over just the shareholders' equity. And let's look at target. So you see, when I see target, just as a quick thing, when I see target's ROA, I'm a little bothered that it has declined. But I mean, if I look back at the financial statement, well, that's problematic because their total assets slid too. I'd have to think about that a little bit. But anyway, ROE is going to equal net income. And I hope you can get the hang of this because it makes financial analysis so easy. You don't have to calculate the ratios with a stupid calculator or anything like that. Divided by, now we got to go over to the balance sheet and find the total shareholders' equity. There it is, $10,953,000,000. So their ROE, target's ROE, is about 25%, and it has eroded from about 26%. Little bit of a problem there, about a 4% decline. I'm not going to get too excited about that. Okay, we've gotten that one. So that actually does the profitability ratios, I think. Oh, no. Good. Okay. Well, dividend ratio. Good thing I had that sheet up. And the other one is the plowback. These are really mirror images of each other. The dividend ratio is the dividends per share divided by the earnings per share, or just dividends divided by total dividends divided by total earnings. So this one, in other words, how much of every dollar that Target has made that belonged to the shareholders does Target give back to the shareholders as a dividend? So that would equal, now I've got to find the dividends per share or just the total dividends. Digging around, I can find a statement of cash flows. Come on, where? Seriously? For heaven's sakes, where's the dividend per share? Where's dividends? Yeah, where? About 30. Oh, see, I wanted to see if you would note, see what it is. So, divided by, just testing your asses. Okay, so anyway, divided by, now go back to earnings per share. Earnings, this was total dividends, so I'll use total earnings. Divided by net earnings. Oh, that came out to be a negative. Let me fix that. Because they mark the dividends as a negative. So anyway, wow. In the current year, Target paid almost half of its profit back to the shareholders as dividends. In other words, this company just give back to its shareholders half of what it makes for them. And the other half it puts back into its operations. That means that Target is not going to be a high growth company. And neither is it going to be a high risk company. Because a lot of the money that you make by investing in Target is going to come right back to you as dividend checks. So you're not betting, rolling the dice, hoping for the stock price to go up. What you're doing is you're buying a stock that will pay you a nice dividend. It's sort of like putting your money into a savings account. You'll get a you'll get interest every. Now, of course, dividends are not as safe as a savings account, but as you can see, Target. As a matter of fact, let me do something real quick here. Target, TGT. I did that wrong. Finance.yahoo.com. TGT. Okay. So as you can see, Target pays a $2.56 dividend on $6. They make $6 per share that belongs to the shareholders after all the bills have been paid. And of that, right now, this is current data, by the way, that's 2017. They are giving the shareholders $2.56 of that. Hence, this is going to be a non-aggressive investment. As a matter of fact, look at this thing. It actually just parks on the market. The beta is just sitting there right on the market. And notice the price-earnings ratio is very modest on this. In other words, investors are not going to pay a lot of money for a share for a dollar of earnings. They're going to pay about $11.64 to claim $1 of earnings. Why? Because the earnings aren't going to grow very fast, are not going to make the company grow very fast because Target gives so much of them back to the shareholders. So, you know, as you can say, well, what should it be? This is Target's policy. They don't need more than about half of the money they make for you. They give the other half back to you. Now, the plowback is just the other side of that. It's just one equals one minus the dividend ratio. Let's try that again. Equals one minus the dividend ratio. So, in other words, they pay the shareholders 49 cents of every dollar they make for them. They plow 51 cents back into the company. Okay. Nothing big there, although this does tell us that this is a low growth, lower risk kind of company. It's not dramatic. You're not going to see the stock price skyrocket. The company doesn't use the shareholders' money to reinvest as much as other companies would. Take that against let's say Netflix. Netflix pays no dividend. Its dividend policy is zero dividend. And hence, every penny of the $2.68 per share that the company makes, it puts right back into the company. Hence why the beta is so high, hence why the price-to-earnings ratio is stupidly high. That P.E. ratio, 129, that is just saying currently investors are willing to pay to have a share of ownership, $129 for every $1 the company is currently making for them at the bottom line. So for every dollar that Netflix makes that belongs to the shareholders, new investors are willing to pay $129 because they think that that $1 Netflix is going to turn into $129. That is insane. But the market, that's what it is right now. This company takes every penny that it makes for the shareholders and plows it back into the company. You have no safety in getting a dividend check. You are on that bull for the ride of the rodeo. Oh, mother's work is never done. Okay, now liquidity, liquidity ratios. The first one is the current ratio. The next one is the quick ratio, which is sometimes called the acid test. So if you hear me say, what's the acid? That's the quick ratio. The last one is not in your book. It's old school back from my time, but it still has important meaning. It's called the burn ratio. Now, these ratios have other names in other places, so there's that. I've seen the burn ratio called other things, but it's not in your book, but it's worth you knowing. The quick ratio is just your current assets over your current liabilities. Equals, you go over here to your balance sheet, you find your current assets, divided by your current liabilities. Really? This says how many times over can your liquid assets pay your soon to be paid debts. So in other words, if I had to, okay, you're my, I owe you money within a year. Okay, I look around. What is quickly liquidable? In Target's case in 2016, I would have had $1.20 for every dollar I owed you. Okay? But this year, I have only 94 cents for every dollar I owe you. Now, should that worry me? No. The liquidity ratio can be all over the place. In fact, a liquidity ratio that is too high is of concern to me because you've got way too many current assets for your current liabilities. Now, there's an old saying, which is actually absolutely false, that current assets should match current liabilities. Do they still teach that in accounting somewhere? I hope not. But I mean, that's not true. Different companies have what are called different working capital management policies. By the end of this course, I'll show you how you do it. There's three different strategies. Some companies have their current ratios are actually very low. Now, the next one is kind of important. This is the one. See this balance sheet right here? Look at the current assets. You got cash, inventory, assets that you've closed up and they're waiting to be sold. Other current assets like your accounts receivable, your prepaid expenses. The truth of the matter is current assets aren't all very liquid. Inventory sucks as a liquid asset. Once you've got inventory, it's going to take a while to turn it into its value, sell it above what it's worth. So for example, and let me give you my own company. I have an incredible inventory of artwork. It's 400 artworks deep, most of them framed, the whole nine yards. I'm not going to sell those in a year. Those are not liquid. If I had to get the money right now to pay bills, I'd be selling it fractions on the dollar. Inventory really isn't liquid. In fact, if you have to dump inventory fast, it's not going to get you hardly anything. So, for example, you ever go into madam? Have you ever gone into a store like Von Maur?
What?
A Von Maur, it's here in town, it's an upscale women's store. Or maybe, I don't know, what would be another women's store, something like that. If you go into one of those kinds of stores, like a Kohl's or a place like that, you ever notice that when you try to navigate through the clothing, especially the women's section, There's everything is packed so tight you're actually walking between racks and sliding along. That goes to the old saying, if it ain't on the floor, it ain't going to sell. You got to get that inventory out there where physically people can see it, or it's just going to sit there. Another, by the way, thing about that, that actually has a double strategy involved in it. If you put the racks very close together, as you slide between them, you feel the fabrics. And then, ooh, nice material. I've done it. You walked through women's sections before, and you've stopped, and, wow, that's cashmere. That could look good on me. It feels, oh, sorry. Anyway, the point, though, is that you get as much on the shelves and get it as in the face of the consumer as you can. That's how you move inventory. If you don't do that, you've got a problem. Are any of you familiar with H&M? Okay, H&M? They are British, but they're now even here. Last year, they reported, it was not that many months ago, they reported unsold inventory right now sits at $4.8 billion unsold. For every one item you sell of retail apparel, you will have between 10 and 25 that will never sell. That's how illiquid inventory is. Eventually, you have to get rid of it. So how do companies get rid of their apparel inventory? An upscale store like a Kohl's, what does it do when it can't sell what's on more within a month? Yeah. Say it. Tries that first. Get it out. See, there your liquidity is going down because not the efficiency. Then what?
Gives it to an oversized store for...
Like what? Do you know any stores?
Yeah.
What?
Ross, TJ Maxx.
TJ Maxx. Marshalls. I'm a TJ Maxx ho. I go there all the time. I there's nothing wrong with pants that have one leg shorter than the other. Seriously. There's nothing wrong with an ugly-ass shirt, as long as I, you know, it's just the cats hate me. I don't wear it out here. So you see, what they're doing is, and they're going to sell that at pennies on the dollar. Inventory is not really a current asset, even though we list it as a current asset. At least for most companies, I shouldn't say most, a lot of companies. So all we're doing with the quick ratio is getting rid of the inventory from current assets. So the quick rate, these were on the wrong line. The quick ratio is going to be, now you'll have to open up parentheses, and then you'll say, all right, take your current assets minus your inventory, close the parentheses, and divide that by your current liabilities. And what will happen? Oh, look at that. You see it? I mean, they are heavy on inventory, which means their liquidity is a lot lower than you would think at first glance. It looks like current assets and current liabilities are very close to each other. Actually, you take out that inventory, and this company is quite illiquid. And it has actually declined in liquidity. So now the burn ratio. And this is where I actually must bring in the zombie apocalypse. Real finance for real people. It is indeed the zombie apocalypse. You have managed to barricade yourself in your house with a few friends, okay? You know, people you love, you've gone through the experience of college together, and all that kind of stuff. Now, here come the zombies to the door. Thank you. This is the door. You say, quick, feed them something. So first you go for the crackers, the Ritz crackers. Then you grab these cans of Spam, ramen noodles, and you throw them out an upstairs window. What do the zombies do? Because the zombies don't want those. What do the zombies want? No. What do zombies want? You don't know what zombies want? Brains! Brains. Okay, so the point, will you focus? Do you understand that those current debtors don't want your inventory? They don't want your accounts receivable. They don't want your prepaid expenses. They want... No. No, they want your brain. They don't want the rest of you. That's high in cholesterol, for God's sake. They want your cash. The burn ratio says, what is the cash divided by the current liabilities? I worry about you folks. How am I going to protect all of you in the zombie apocalypse? I mean, seriously. Okay, so. Someone tell her about the zombies, please. Equals. So we take the cash and its equivalents divided by the current liabilities. And we scoot that over here. They have less than 20 cents. So in other words, the zombie needs 100 zombie brain calories a day. Target can provide only 20 of those brain calories. Now, rough crowd tonight. Okay, now, that's liquidity. Go to the debt ratios. Now, these debt ratios, the first one, debt to total assets. Debt to total assets. Now, to do this one, and I wrote a couple of problems in your homework for this, but I know that Cengage put in a couple of its own. So you got to be a little careful here. When I say debt, we are talking about the long-term debt. So in other words, for this one, you would say debt to total assets equals long-term debt divided by total assets. This is otherwise known as the leverage of the firm. And as you can see, this firm is about 30% debt and 70% ownership. It can be all over the place. The higher the debt to total assets, all other things being equal, the riskier the corporation. But at the same time, the faster the growth of ROE. ROE is magnified by debt. Return on equity is magnified by debt. This is called the gains to leverage. And on Wednesday, I will take the time to show you how to become a millionaire. Or really ridiculously poor. It could go either way, but I mean, YOLO and all of that. So in this case, though, a 30% debt, 70% equity capital structure, as we call it, is actually conservative, pretty conservative. I worry, actually, as much about a company that has a number that's too low as I do about a number that's too high. The closer to zero, the less the company relies on the magnification of debt on return on equity. The higher the number is, the riskier the corporation gets. In this case, this would be considered a very normal, very responsible ratio target is holding. The next one is called the times interest earned. This is how many times over the money that is available to pay the interest can pay the interest on borrowings. So in other words, you would never want this number to be less than one. I want you to write that in your notes because it's a very good midterm question. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. You never want that ratio to go below one because if it's below one, the company doesn't have the money to pay its debt holders their interest. So the times interest earned here, in the case of Target, equals, we're looking for EBIT, earnings before interest and taxes, or operating income is the same thing. And it's such a pain in the butt doing this. That doesn't look anything like EBIT. It doesn't look like anything like operating income. But that's the line. Earnings from continuing operations before interest, expense, and income taxes. That's earnings before interest and taxes. That's operating income. So here it is, equals that divided by the interest expense. In this case, the company can pay its interest about five times over. It's called also, sometimes you'll hear it called the interest coverage. In this case, Target can pay, has for every dollar that it owes currently in interest, it has $4.95 to pay it. Let me repeat that one. That's another way to think about it. For every dollar that Target owes right now that it should pay, that it has to pay, it has $4.95 to pay it. This should be a fairly stable number, I think. Geez, Zooey. Well, that's gone down a lot. Moving along there. We'll go and we'll look at a couple of asset ratios, asset activity ratios. Now, this one actually would be hard for us to do, average a collection period, because I don't have, look here, I don't have immediately available what they sold on credit. I don't have an accounts receivable line here. I'd have to dig around to find it to do that one. But I can do the next one. I can do inventory turnover. This tells us, overall, how many times did they clear their inventory during the year? Now, they didn't actually do that, but on an average basis, how many times did they flush their inventory completely? So in this case, what we would do is, if you look at the formula here, it's sales over inventory. So what I do here is I just take, okay, good, equals sales divided by their inventory. So in this case, Target flushed its inventory completely more than 8 times. The higher the better, because inventory costs money, storage and all of that. You don't want it so high that you're actually killing yourself. Technically, there's an inventory management system called just-in-time where the inventory turnover ratio approaches infinity. Japanese companies were big into that with cars. The American car companies tried to follow the model and it turned into a fiasco. And then there's the asset turnover. If you considered your assets to be actually inventory that you need to flush, you would take the sales over total assets. Total assets. They flushed their assets almost 2 times. So they're even making their assets work pretty hard. Oops. Not bad. Now I will pick up the rest of these. For the rest of this time, I'm going to give you a quiz. And we'll finish this on Wednesday. So bear with me. And once you finish with the quiz, that's all I have for you.